Welcome back to Women to the Wise. Today we're going to talk finances. With inflation so high and the Fed constantly raising rates trying to neutralize the housing boom, debt is on the rise, which means stress is on the rise for families, specifically couples. We thought we'd explore how finances are handled among couples and how it impacts their relationships. Joining us today is our mutual friend, Felicia.
Hello.
Felicia is a multi-entrepreneur, realtor, mother, and all-around amazing woman. So thank you so much for joining us.
That was so nice. Thank you.
Well, and one little tidbit too. So I actually got my real estate license officially today, and yay! Felicia has been one of my biggest supporters.
Very cool.
And even though we're at different brokerage, she just helped me and mentored me, and I know that you'll be a great contact. So thank you so much for that.
I'm so excited for you.
And today, okay, so finances. We kind of talked about this because we realized, just even amongst the three of us, that we all manage things differently and that there may not be a right way or a wrong way, but we find it really interesting that things are different. And one of the biggest things that I've learned that was kind of a surprise to me is that women are actually the primary decision makers for household decisions. I mean, whether it's a service or even buying a house, women are typically the primary decision maker, and 90% of the women control and share financial responsibility. Who in your household do you think makes the financial decisions?
Ooh, I'll let you go ahead and go first.
So we both do, but we do it a little bit differently. Specifically, when we bought our house, Ryan was working. Ryan was the breadwinner. So I went out and did all of the house hunting by myself with our then realtor, because I wasn't licensed then. This was like 2011. And I just picked the three that I loved and would be happy in no matter what. And then he had final decision, because I would have liked any of them.
Right. Okay, so that makes sense. So you guys do a lot of it together. Yeah. What about you?
I would probably say Sammy makes, or my husband would make, more of the decision, mm-hmm. but I have a lot of say in, I have a lot more say in it.
Okay.
Just because I feel as though he looked at the financial side of it.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking at, will this work for our family?
Mm. Yeah.
So I think he makes the ultimate decision because of the finances. Can we afford it? What's the payments like?
Right.
What is that going to look like
but
for our family?
But it's still kind of collaborative.
But yes.
So I mean, decision's the collaborative. Decision,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But he manages. And I think, I wonder if that has to do with him. Does he pay the bills?
He does.
He pays the bills. What about for you?
So this is funny. Since moving here, Ryan now pays the bills.
Okay.
But we've been married for 13 years next month. And until we moved here about 20 months ago, I always paid the bills.
Okay. So that's really interesting too, because I've always paid the bills. I have all of the account access, and I actually worry, like, if something were to happen to me, like, what would Tyler do? I told Felicia this the other day, that I actually coached him through, okay, if I die, you know the password to my phone, everything saved on my phone. But we make financial decisions together, but he has no idea. He has no idea if we are in debt or if we are, like, millionaires. He would never know. We're not, by the way. Either.
You know, I think that's kind of your personality, though. Mm-hmm. And I know that's my husband's personality. And so I allow him to do that. I know I could do it.
Yeah.
But even, I mean, he has this thing for me, too. I mean,
right.
This is step by step. If anything happens to me, this is what you do. These are your accounts you go to. Here's the password. I mean, everything is laid out for me, which is, again, that's his personality.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll let him thrive in that.
Yeah, he kind of enjoys that. And I think, I mean, it's one of those roles that you fall into. Like, there was no discussion of you are going to handle this and you're going to handle this. It's like we almost just naturally fell into that
but
role.
Who also sets everything up?
Me.
I set everything up. And I think that's why you end up being the one to take on the payment, because you set it all up.
Yeah.
Whether it's the internet, the mortgage, the utilities, whatever it is, if you set it up, you're probably going to be the one paying it.
Does Ryan does he have access to the bank accounts? Like, he knows how to get into them and stuff?
Yeah. So we have, well, this will probably come up, but we have our joint bank account and we operate off of one big credit card, and I am an authorized user on that credit card. So everything comes out of one credit card that then is attached to our bank account. Mm. So he sees the bank account every time he's paying that bill, and we pay it every month.
So you do the credit card for points or for what purpose?
We like points and we like free vacations. So we've got to rack up all these bills anyway, month after month after month. Why not put it all on a credit card and get the points?
For sure.
And get a free vacation out of life.
That's something that I need to do better at because I was afraid. I mean, I was always taught credit cards are bad.
Okay. And I think most people are taught that.
I think so. So it's almost this mindset change because we don't need a credit card, so I just pay it. But then exactly like you said, I'm like, well, maybe I should get something for points. But then I also am wondering if I'm one of those like out of sight, out of mind people that I might not be on top of it as much as I should. So I kind of worry about it from that perspective.
So we started small when we switched to using a credit card for everything. And it was only because we were having like hit after hit of fraud on our bank cards. Mm-hmm. And I was just sick of having to get new bank cards and all of that. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know what? Let's just switch to using the credit cards for everything.
Sense.
We'll start with just the groceries. It takes a couple of days to hit the account, right? The credit card account.
Yeah.
So we would let it go a couple of days and we'd hop on and pay the grocery bill. And then we were like, oh, we got this. Easy peasy. So it's just one of those things that slowly over time we added more and more onto that credit card. And now it's just all encompassing. It's literally everything, which does make budgeting really easy because we can see really easily what we do spend on.
Is it put a pie chart together?
It does.
Okay, I love myself a chart.
But something I feel like with a credit card to know is that whenever you have your own business, kind of like you have your own business, you need to kind of divide this is home account, this is what I use for my, you know, for my work as my work account.
Mm.
And so it's easy to build points off of something that isn't so much personal, but a credit card that is for your business.
And so we do the same type of thing with a separate business credit card. So same thing. We use the credit card for absolutely everything. And then it's attached to the bank account that pays it off. And we just pay it in full every month so we don't have interest.
So that's a good idea.
That's what my husband does.
I mean,
because he's kind of like doing his own business. He's a contract worker for his company.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a credit card that he builds points on. And it's awesome.
It makes taxes easier. Yes. It makes everything so much simpler. I don't have to go through receipts and the bank statements and everything. Yeah. I just have it all on one credit card statement.
We pay for Christmas every year with the points.
Really?
On there. Yes.
Oh my
and
gosh.
We take free vacations every year.
Actually, after we talked, I ended up going and looking up a travel credit card because we're going on a trip. So I went and got a different credit card and I bought everything, all the travel stuff on that card. So then you get X amount of points. It was like 60,000 points or something that I can use. So it was because of our conversation that I ended up doing that. So I'm on the train finally, but I do think it's a slippery slope. Because
100%.
We were reading, I think you sent the article. What was that debt?
Oh my gosh. It was, just so I get it right, an article had said 1 in 3 Americans can cover a $400 emergency in cash.
Cannot cover, right?
I'm sorry, cannot cover an emergency, a $400 emergency in cash.
So that's wild to me.
That is crazy.
That's a huge percentage of people that would be screwed in the event. My husband, he does construction. He cut his hand. We had to go to the, not the emergency room, the urgent care, and get stitches. That was like a $300 bill. But we have money for those types of events. If most of America doesn't,
absolutely.
I guess
it's scary.
Most, but a third of America that doesn't, that's crazy to think about.
It is scary. I mean, obviously we live in a well-to-do area where finances aren't as big of an issue, but that does put things into perspective that there are so many people out there that do struggle, you know, whether it's getting a job and if you're underemployed. I know unemployment's low, but underemployment isn't. And it's hard. And I empathize for people who do that because imagine the stress that you have with that. But then I go back and I look at, okay, so a lot of people do have that inability to pay such a simple bill, but the average car payment in America today, it was Q2 2023, is almost $760.
That is outrageous.
You know what I want to see? I want to see the average interest rate because we talked about this.
Yeah.
My car payment on my little new car is, it sounds insane, but we have 0% interest and we're paying the car off in a total of 3 years.
Right.
So that is why our payment is big.
So
I'm big on interest. I want to know what those interest payments are.
So recently my husband just bought a new car. I mean, literally like 2 months ago, maybe even a month and a half ago. And he has perfect credit. Mm-hmm. Okay. Perfect credit. And they hit him with an 11%.
Stop it.
11%.
Did he pay it?
No. We bought the car cash, but yeah. It was like,
I asked them what it would be
in the world.
If
what,
we extended
world
that,
can you do that?
That year term, right? Yeah. Can we get the payment down if we extend the year term?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but then you're, and we have great credit.
Sure.
Yeah, but then you're going to end up paying, this was a year and a half ago now. So it was, yeah, you're going to end up paying like 4.5% interest. I was like, no.
Yeah,
no,
yeah,
I'll take
yeah
my 0%.
Even 4%,
please.
6%, but 11%, that to me is. That's like you're robbing someone.
Most of America doesn't look at their interest rate. They look at that monthly payment. Can I afford the monthly payment?
I used to do that. I didn't know. I mean, but you know, as you grow older, you do learn more about finances.
Yeah.
But I even find I'm knocking on 40. It's close. And I don't know that much about finances. Like, I don't know whether we weren't. Because my parents were middle class and they were fine. They always told me we were broke, by the way.
We weren't taught.
Yeah,
Ryan and I taught ourselves.
I do that too. I always tell them we're broke, but we never were. But they were, I don't know, I guess we just never had conversations. And it might be because my dad was the one that handled a lot of finances and he passed when I was pretty young. So maybe I didn't get that. Or it's just like you just said, you didn't learn a lot either. It's like a process that you have to go through. I finally set time up with my financial advisor actually for next week. So I wish I could have done this before.
Yeah.
So I could have actual good advice because I'm not a finance expert, but I don't think most people are.
No.
But I'm also.
And that's really sad because I think most Americans are not taught that, which is they fall into trouble and then they learn that way once they get into trouble.
Mm.
And that's a tough way to come back at.
It is. And, you know, I have many people in my life who filed for bankruptcy who make way more than me. But they didn't manage it properly.
Correct.
And so that's something that they've learned. But then I almost find that those people tend to have a hard time bouncing back, not because of their credit, but because they fall into the same habits.
I was going to say, there's a lot that goes into bankruptcy. I mean, you could do a whole other podcast on just filing bankruptcy because you get a lot of benefit from it. And you just wait 7 years and you can go ahead and buy another home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's not a long-term negative effect for you to deter you from filing bankruptcy.
Mm.
So people can just continue their habits, rack up the debt, and file bankruptcy.
So just every 7 years, you say, huh? Maybe that's. I'm just kidding.
But you know, on another note, it's kind of something that in America, it's the American dream, right? To own a home, own a nice home, own cars, nice cars, a 750 plus. A month car.
Yeah.
Just to have the nice things, to have credit cards, to keep up.
Mm.
There was a saying that Sammy and I would actually like go back to constantly. I can't remember if it was from Dave Ramsey or our pastor, but it was we buy things we don't need with money we don't have to impress people we don't even know.
Mm.
And so
true.
It's like,
so true.
Why are you doing it? You
especially
know?
These days with social media. And I go back, I think of, who was it? It was some little rapper. It was one of the little rappers, like Lil Bow Wow or something like that. But he was taking pictures in front of this like private jet and saying like going, you know, jet setting, whatever. And then they came and somebody took a picture of him in Coach on the same day.
Yes.
So it's almost like this
wasn't his jet.
It was not his jet. I don't even know if he was there, if it was literally just like a stock photo that somebody photoshopped him in front of. One, how embarrassing. But two, it goes back to what you were just saying.
Mm-hmm.
We do have this need to impress people, and people are willing to go into debt for it.
Yeah, for
sure. And I get it. I feel pressure living in this area of having nice things, but honestly, I don't care what people drive. Like, I don't care if you're showing up in your 1990 Honda Civic. I'm not going to be like, oh, look at him. But I think there's people that would.
Oh, 100% there are people that would. The things that catch coming out of other people's mouths, it makes you go, oh, wow. What are you saying about me when I walk away?
Who wants to impress those people anyway?
Exactly.
Though?
From the statistics, mm-hmm. right? There's plenty of people that will do that, you know, that want to show what they have.
Mm.
And to me, it's don't not have nice things. Don't
right.
work for nice things if you
right.
want nice things.
Right.
But for what?
At what cost. Yeah, literally.
If you want nice things, your butt better be out there making a ton of money so that you can live below your means and still have the nice things.
And that's, you know, that I actually came kind of at a crossroads with this recently. So I've always lived kind of, I've never had debt. I've been fine financially, but I started having this crisis of I'd hate my job and my former work. And we live in a single income house because it's just me. And that adds a lot of stress.
Sure.
Because I'm sitting there looking at my finances and think, you know, I was planning on getting into real estate full time. How many months can I go without selling anything and still live in this nice area with our payments and everything? And I don't think I had enough. I think maybe it was like 7 months if I didn't make anything.
Which is so much more than most people jump into real estate, honestly.
Yeah, but it's scary. And that caused a lot of stress. And that was one of the things we wanted to talk about was the stress in marriage that finances can bring, because that was the first time that I'd ever felt stressed about finances because we've always managed well. And again, 7 months is actually a lot.
Yeah.
But it still didn't feel enough. Sure. And it caused me to panic. And then that caused, you know, I'm a communicator with my husband, so it wasn't an actual issue, but I did stress about it. So have you guys ever been in any scenario where finances did cause stress in your marriage, or even just had to have that big conversation about it?
Ooh, yes. I know for us, we had the American dream when Sean was probably when he was born. We bought the big lavish house because we were going to have lots of babies and fill it up, right? We have one. And we had the cars. He had a weekend car, you know.
He does lived like in his cars. I've seen all his cars.
My husband is a car guy. There's not much he loves,
right?
But cars.
Yeah.
And that's a really expensive hobby.
Yes.
But he appreciates it.
Yeah.
And I'm never one to say, no, don't do it, because then I felt like,
that's his thing. You don't want to stop him from being happy.
Yeah. And that was just his thing. And so we had like three cars, which meant three car payments, a house payment. It was in this nice area. So there's taxes, like buku taxes. you know, just me staying at home, mm-hmm. A new baby.
That's a lot of stress.
Shots, like, for baby. Like, it just everything adds up. And we started looking at our budget, like, where's all the money going? We had nothing. We were like literally the poorest rich people. He made great money, but we never saw it.
It happens.
And so we really had, and that was my dream home. And I told him, no, I'm not leaving this house. Mm-hmm. I'm not leaving this house. Like, you better figure it out. Like, I don't know what you're going to do, but you better figure it out.
Yeah.
And he didn't. And so, like, the Lord really impressed in my heart, like, how much this, like, something needed to change. Mm-hmm. And we ended up having to move. And we moved in. And people thought we were crazy. We moved from, like, a 3,800-square-foot house to a 1,900-square-foot house, which is not bad.
That's not small.
But it was a three-bedroom, two-bath. Yeah. Much smaller than what we had.
But people saw the change.
People saw the change. They were like, oh, my gosh, are you guys okay? What happened? We sold the cars.
Yeah.
We sold everything. I sold my half of my house. I mean, I was just like, take it. I don't care.
Because it wasn't worth the stress.
Yeah. It had a cost. Him and I were fighting. Him and I were on the brinks of, like, the other side, mm-hmm. of, you know, the D, like the D word. And it was just, it was not a quality of life. I wasn't a good mom. I was always stressed. It was not a good situation for our family. But I'll tell you what, once we let go of everything, and we were literally debt free. We were debt free, other than like our new house or whatever, but we were able to buy, you know, like, things cash. We were able to, like,
take vacations, have experiences,
not be stressed every day. For 2 weeks. Yeah. And it was like, oh my gosh, like, this is on the other side. Mm-hmm. What was I holding on to a stupid house
and
for?
And you don't have to live in a mansion to live that lifestyle.
Oh my gosh.
You can probably live that lifestyle if you downsize and you don't live in a McMansion.
Absolutely.
You know?
100%.
Yeah. Because everything has a cost. Mm-hmm. And that cost was a really, really high cost for us, and it almost cost our marriage.
Personally. Mm-hmm.
It cost pride. It cost a lot of stuff because people looked at us like, something's wrong with you guys.
Which is
y'all are
so
poor.
Terrible because people are naturally
people are nosy.
They
oh
are. They're
gosh.
Naturally nosy. I get that.
Right.
That's a big change. As a friend, you're like, well, what's going on? What happened?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What can I help with? But ultimately, it's really nobody's business.
It's not.
If
no.
you're moving houses, no matter if it's an upsize, a downsize, no matter what it is,
yeah.
it shouldn't matter to anybody else.
I remember people looking at me like, you're so happy. Are you okay?
Yeah, like, I'm not like, what it should
I'm like,
be
this
like.
This is amazing.
I actually, it's funny you say that because I have a former coworker now, but she was recently married and is talking. She lives in Portland, which is outrageously expensive.
Sure.
And she's trying to buy a house. And I tell her all the time, like, why? I'm like, when, you know, why do you want it now? Is it good for you now? And I wish if I could redo things that I would have bought a smaller house than I have now. I love my house and I love my neighborhood and I'm not going to change it. But to not have to worry about that, I could have bought cash for something else.
Sure.
And not worry about. So if I wanted to make this big change, like I was going through my midlife crisis, still I am, and trying to figure things out, that I wouldn't have been stressed. But hindsight's 20/20. I mean, we all go through it.
Oh, yeah.
And everything worked out. But I tell her that. I'm like, anyone who's listening who's young, like live below your means.
Yes.
Yes. If I could give a tip, that would have been it. And I also far more value experiences than things
Same.
Personally.
Absolutely.
And I would, again, we're good now. And now I can have experiences, which I'm excited about. But I was panicking that I had too many things and wouldn't be able to provide experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. How about you, though? Was there a moment in time that was something that happened to your marriage? Or
I don't know if Ryan and I are unique in this, but we met when I was 20. So I was very young. He had nothing. I had nothing. We were both living in our parents' homes. So we literally had nothing together. Mm-hmm. So he was getting paid. Well, this, he was getting paid a little funky back then. And I was working in a restaurant, so I had a lot of cash tips. Mm-hmm. And gosh, I don't know how much detail I can go into on this.
Nobody
I'm very
the FBI
creative.
Is watching,
I am a very creative person. So when we were our first year of marriage, we were living in an apartment. We made great money for like being young and not having anybody else to care for.
Sure.
But then I found out I was pregnant.
Mm.
We had two car payments, all the things. So we were, before we even got married, we were coming home and throwing all of our extra cash from the week mm-hmm. into a shoebox mm-hmm. that we were using to save mm-hmm. up to pay off his truck so that we would only have one payment because we knew we would be more comfortable married with only one car payment.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what we did prior to getting married. Do I recommend that for young people? No, that could have gone very south.
But
he could have got a paid off truck and I could have been ass out. So do I recommend that to young people? No. I knew I was going to marry this man. We got married. We lived beneath our means. When we found out we were pregnant, the upgrade to a two-bedroom was going to be more than what a mortgage would have been mm-hmm. at that time in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So we bought a house. It was cheaper than what a two-bedroom rental would have been, but that was the better option for us financially.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And we still made sure that we could live off of just his income.
Mm.
That took a lot of adjusting for us because then I stayed home. I wasn't going to go back to work at a restaurant with
right.
a baby.
Yeah.
I'll just stay home. We can cut some things out. And we did. We cut a lot of extras out to make mm-hmm. sure that we could live on one income.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also construction. So we've always had a big savings because at any point in time, especially in 2011, work
yeah.
was scarce.
Yeah.
At any point in time, he could be out. He could have an injury, which that has also happened to us. We have had to live off of savings because of an injury, because of lack of work, because mm-hmm. of whatever. So many different times in our marriage mm-hmm. that we do have a really large savings
nesting, yeah.
because of that, because we've had
Wonderful.
To live through that.
Yeah.
So no, we've never had a stress on our marriage like that because we do really talk about it all together and we came from absolutely nothing together. So everything that we have, we built together and it's all just been a part of a huge lifelong conversation. So no, we do have stressful times as far as finances go, but not within our marriage. Like there was never a blame. There was never
So you share the stress
awesome.
Together and the finance together.
Yeah.
And you mentioned it earlier that you guys also have joint accounts. And that's something that I've talked with a lot of friends and I've read on a lot of things. A lot of people have separate accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And millennials are actually, it says here, millennial couples are most likely to have separate accounts than any other generation, which is our generation. We're all different parts of millennials.
Yeah.
We're millennials. But the interesting kind of tidbit is the higher the income, though, the less likely you are to have separate accounts. So I don't know if that's an education
thing. I like this, and this is my theory on this.
What's your theory?
I think when you get away from the what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours and everything is just ours, you have a bigger pool. I might not be able to go buy a home with only $20,000, but if you've also got $20,000, now we've got $40,000. And if we can operate as a whole, we can buy a home.
Yeah.
So when you have those higher income earners.
It's all house related from the realtor.
I know. But when you have those higher incomes and you pool it together, you're capable of doing a lot more.
And investing
$50,000 in a CD isn't going to do much.
Right.
$100,000 in a CD is going to do a lot.
Yeah.
So when you get away from the what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours, and everybody is just a whole, and it all just goes into one pot, and you don't worry about who put in what, you can do more with your money.
I think so too, and I think communication is extremely key in all aspects of marriage, but especially finances. And I think one of the things I was reading, it said 1/3 of couples say they've committed some form of financial infidelity, meaning that they have either hid something from their partner or have lied about how much something cost. And I thought that was really interesting because we also have joint bank accounts, but we've never really talked about, we do all of our financial decisions together. So never would I go out and buy a car without my husband.
That would never happen.
And it's really funny. We have different natural thresholds too. I will go out and spend whatever. Like I'll go to the spa. I had a spa day yesterday for my birthday. I spent like, I don't know, X amount of hundreds of dollars.
It costs a lot of money.
It does.
Yeah.
But my husband, like, he'll literally be like, hey, Ellie, I saw this on Amazon for $27. Is it okay? I'm like, yes. Why are you asking me?
So I just did that the other day with an $8 buy on Amazon. But I'm not asking for permission. I'm asking, do we need it? Is this a silly purchase? I know it's only $8, but.
Yes.
I think that's so funny. But so it just kind of begs the question, like, do y'all have a financial threshold that you've discussed or that has kind of naturally formed in your relationships?
Ooh, I think our threshold is like over $200.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's increased.
Wait, do you think he would go out though and buy like a car without talking to you? Because that's his thing.
Yes.
So his threshold's higher.
Yeah, his threshold is higher. I mean, but it's kind of like we've already discussed that. Hey, I'm looking for something.
It's coming. Okay. It's not like he's just walking in the door with a brand new car.
Right, right, right. But he will go to an auction and
come home. Yeah, we've seen him drive up in one. I think it was a surprise.
It was. I'm like, what is that?
Yeah. But again, you've talked about it. So, do you feel like his threshold is higher than yours, or do you think he'd care if you did something similar to that, like if you kind of planted the seed?
So he plants seeds and so do I.
Okay.
But I feel like his frequency on the threshold, you know, is not so many, but his threshold is definitely higher than mine. I mean, he doesn't go and spend like $200,000 on a car.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's way more than, you know,
you wouldn't
$200. Yes. But it, the other day, I went over that $200. I bought Sean, he's getting, you know, a big kid room.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got him a desk and a dresser, and I spent like almost $500. And
did
I was like,
did he notice?
Well, he did once I told him.
Okay.
But he was out of town.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just did it. I'm like, free shipping.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a deal. Like, I've been looking for furniture, and it costs way more to have somebody come and do this.
Yeah.
And so I went over it, and like, my heart was like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? What am I going to say? You know?
Yeah.
He was okay with it, but he was like, no, like, I trust that you're making good decisions for our family.
Right.
But it's the...
That, right there.
Right.
That is key. You have a trust in each other that you are not going to damage your family financially.
Yes.
And
yeah.
we know people that is not the case, and it's a major issue in the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan and I would never purposefully... or even unintentionally do something without talking to each other that would damage our family financially, which makes it a lot easier for him to go spend $500 on a stupid gun. Well, I think it's stupid. He thinks it's great. I can go spend $500 on my face. He thinks it's stupid. I think it's great.
Right.
So everybody can spend, and it doesn't matter who's making it, because you're not going to hurt your family financially,
mm-hmm.
and there's a trust there.
Sure. Yeah.
That's the key. And I think when you start committing this, what they call financial infidelity, and lying about it,
that trust is gone.
The trust is gone. Even if it's something so simple, like when I was reading the articles, it was like clothes. Like you spent $200 instead of $50. You know, it's not worth the lies and that the damage that the lie can cause.
Yep.
Just over $50 or $100 or whatever it may be. So that's part of it, is being honest and open.
I will admit, maybe it's under the infidelity.
the financial infidelity.
Yes, Let's go ahead and put that into
financial.
In the comments. Financial infidelity is that I usually get cash.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from Sammy, just so like, hey, here's cash. Do what you want with it, yeah. Right? And so if we go, and I have my $200 threshold, right?
Yeah.
And so if I go shopping and it's over that,
yeah,
I'm like, well, I have cash.
Yeah.
So he only sees $200, but I have $150 in my purse.
Yeah.
And so, he doesn't ask, yeah, you know, because it's within the $200. And he doesn't ask me like, hey, right, did you spend over the $200 because you had cash in your purse? He doesn't, mm-hmm, ask, so I don't say anything.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's considered.
I think a lot of people do that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the thing is with my marriage is he's so unfinancially savvy. Like he knows nothing, and bless his heart. And he just didn't know anything. In fact, when I met him, so we were relatively young. He had just turned 22 and I was 24. And he was working an hourly wage job, not making, I don't know, 10, 12 bucks an hour, which was good back then.
Yeah.
And, but he would go out to eat for all meals every day and spend like 30 bucks. So when he met me, I was like, okay, here's what you're making and here's what you're spending. You were literally like netting like $30 a day, if that. So I'm like, you need to stop. So I started making him sandwiches and stuff. It was so basic, but he's not, that's just not been his strength. Like we have different strengths. That's not his.
Yeah.
But again, he has no idea. Like he's very lucky that I'm good at money. Otherwise, I think he'd still be living in debt. But I used to budget and I don't now, and I wish I did. And I think you kind of mentioned it earlier. We get to a point where we are financially stable enough that we don't have to nickel and dime things. But from an investment and being financially wise and spending better, I do wish I did, because I think the amount of money that I spend on eating out, for example, is pretty high.
Atrocious. I think it is for all of us. Same. I think that's probably my biggest expense month after month.
And I invest that money into the market and I don't. And I'm like, even if it's just like $100 a week that I did not eat out in, but put it in somewhere else. I mean, think of that. In a year, it's $5,200. And I wish I did that. So I know that I could be financially smarter. So is there any areas that you guys wish that you could grow in financially that we should maybe do a little research and look at?
I feel like I've grown. I mean, for me personally, my husband is in finance.
That's lucky. I need so. Can we
get tips? Can we have him on? He can. I mean, even preparing for this,
that would be one to have the men perspective.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
That would be interesting.
Maybe just complaining about us too much. I heard on the podcast that Stephanie uses the cash to go over the $200 limit.
I hope he doesn't listen to this podcast. I haven't shared anything with him.
Whoops.
Yes, I know. What did he say?
So because he's in finance, so you feel like you have that savviness already in your relationship.
I do, but I wasn't like that. I feel like I was just like Tyler. For me, it wasn't that I would spend a whole lot.
Yeah.
It was I would save what I needed to, but I had no idea about investments. Mm. What things, to me now, and even teaching our son, is that how long did you have to work? How many hours or what did you have to do for that money to pay for that?
Mm.
So that thing that was $150, how many hours of chores did you have to do to pay for that?
That's a good way to make the kids understand, because around here it grows on trees, they think. Like they don't understand.
Yeah. And that's something that I had to get into my mind of when I would go and make a purchase, was how many hours did my husband have to work for this in order for me to buy this for 1 second, like mm-hmm. 1 second swipe, you know?
It's so easy to spend money.
Yes.
And everything is just a swipe or just a click away.
It is.
But it gives it more validity, I feel like, when you understand how much it really cost. Mm-hmm. Because there's always a cost, right? How much time did he spend? What cost did he have to make? What sacrifice did he have to make in order for him to make that, in order for me to make that swipe? And so I feel like that is kind of something now I understand about finance. And to me, it's like once you understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're good. Well, very cool. Well, I think we can wrap it up here with some tips about finances in marriages, especially because 73% of married or cohabitating Americans say that they experience relationship tension due to money decisions. So we've kind of talked about our own tension that we've had or that we've experienced or things that we've learned, but some tips actually that came directly from Dave Ramsey and us, kind of a mix in how to handle finances as a couple. So one, discuss your lifestyle choices together and decide how to approach family and money together. So I think that's sometimes I think when couples are new, they may be afraid to have these kinds of discussions, and it's something that needs to happen. Stephanie, keep purchases out in the open. No, using the cash.
I plead the fifth.
But that is something, again, you talked about. Felicia brought up the point of trust and honesty in a relationship, and that's something big. One of these is create a budget, which I need to follow, and I think I'm going to start doing this so I can be a little more savvy with the money. Don't let salary differences come between you. And we didn't really discuss that, but having some single income households here, and there's a lot of inequity in our dollar value that we bring to the marriage. However, I think all three of us have very equal marriages.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So even though that there's inequity in the finances as far as who brings what in, that doesn't impact who spends what. Like, we are family units, and I think that's key.
But there was a lot of years Ryan was the breadwinner, and he made all the money. What was I supposed to do, not spend anything?
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean?
There are a lot of people with that mindset.
That's
and I
true.
Think that's what needs to be broken a little bit. And that kind of mindset leads to unhealthy marriages.
Agreed.
And then last thing is to talk about a spending threshold. We kind of said that some have, I think you guys have kind of established one. Mine kind of more naturally came up. But having those open and honest communication is helpful to not letting finances break your marriage apart. So, well, that's kind of it for us today. Thank you so much, Felicia.
Thanks for having me.
For coming on today and experiencing. And again, thanks for being such a big supporter for me personally.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what you do.
Yes.
We're going to have you back on for some other ones. I mean, we already kind of established what we can.
I know. The next steps that we'll have.
To finance.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining Women to the Wise. And we hope that you'll join us next time. Thank you.